I have to look to see who the amener is over here. It's a delightful presence in our midst. Welcome this morning. Join me, please, in Judges chapter 12. Judges chapter 12. As you're turning there, I want to define a word in the title, in fact. And it's a word found in Judges 12. But it's made the dictionary. It's there. And a shibboleth is in this handy-dandy version. It's simply a membership identifying word. Now, we know these pretty well. We just don't use this fancy word to talk about them. So in one sense, it's simply, it may be a pronunciation membership defining as is actually the case in Judges, and that may, some of you may be tomato people, but you know, the way you say it tells you something, and maybe a word that you use. It may be the y'all, you guys difference, membership identified by words. It may be there are people in our midst who may actually say pop, or soda, rather than the Curtis Pope-approved cold drink. Membership identified by words. And for those of you who, in our midst, habla español, endlessly, the intonations, the pronunciations indicate where you're from. And words you use for different things, it indicate, and you know that. It's always with us. In our time, we encounter this. We encounter the word social justice. How is that different from plain vanilla justice? I don't know, but it's worth wrestling with because God cares about justice. And so we need to understand how the meanings of words identify membership. But so far, all I've suggested is maybe just maybe charming differences, maybe curious differences in how we identify ourselves by this. But as I started thinking about this, our times actually, I couldn't help but remember the story behind the word shibboleth, not its dictionary definition. Now, the dictionary may even tell you it's from the Bible. It may even tell you something about its origins, and from what I've read, it's somewhat uncertain. Either it means ear of grain or stream, but it's not about the meaning. It's about the pronunciation. Join me in Judges chapter 12. I begin in verse 5 for this part. Judges 12, verse 5, and I read, "And the Gileadites captured the fords of the Jordan against the Ephraimites." I probably gave myself away right there. "And when any of the fugitives of Ephraim said, 'Let me go over,' the men of Gilead said to him, 'Are you an Ephraimite?' Then he said, 'No,' they said to him. 'Then say shibboleth.' And he said, 'Sibboleth.'" Some kind of almost a lisp, for he could not pronounce it right. "Then they seized him and slaughtered him at the fords of the Jordan. At that time, 42,000 of the Ephraimites fell." Well, this oddly polysyllabic little word that might refer to pleasant differences takes a different cast now, because now it's a death word. It comes to us in the Bible as a story of people dying because of the way they say a word. Now, obviously, I'm using this one little piece to hint at the larger piece of the Jephthah story, which is one piece of the larger Judges story. And so I want you to understand that the pleasant part has to be joined with this larger, ominous part. Jephthah you recall, is himself something of a bandit chief. He's pushed to the fringes geographically because of his own background. His own parentage is troublesome, so he's shunned. And worthless people gather around him, we're told. Right? That's a great line. This is not Robin Hood nobility necessarily. Chapter 11 of Judges in verse 3, then Jephthah fled from his brothers and lived in the land of Tob, and worthless fellows collected around Jephthah and went out with him. What a great and troubling phrase there. Worthless fellows, they gathered around him. This is a band. And he's a bandit chief. And yet, God uses him. That's, of course, the story of Judges. Unlikely people brought forward. And Jephthah does it. He does God's work, and he knows that God's doing it. He gives credit to God. The Spirit of the Lord is on him. But it's a mixed bag. We know Jephthah makes a tragic vow, horrific vow, and his daughter dies in his keeping of that vow. But Jephthah does God's work. So again, Jephthah's people practice the shibboleth. It's a mixed bag. And so I don't want you to escape the sense, understanding that this weird word that might appear in your parlor game sometime is part of this conspicuous downward spiral of the world of the judges. And of course, three judges are named in quick succession in chapter 12, and then 13 turns to that extended consideration of Samson. And you understand, we turn Samson into kind of a nice superhero story if we're not careful. A children's story. And it's a lot more troubling than that when we think about it. It's part of this downward spiral, and actually beyond Samson, Judges becomes worse and worse and worse in a downward spiral. And so I'm tempted, right here this morning, I'm tempted to see our times like Judges, a downward spiral. Something little, like the way you say a word, becomes the cause of your death. That's weird. But as I've told you before, when the going gets weird, the weird turn pro. And we live in such a time, and so I fret. I worry. And people here worry. Yet, of course, is Butt's cousin. This is not the whole of the story. And so I want to give due credit to what happened at the fords of the Jordan. I want to note the horror there. I want to note that what was known beforehand, this was not new, and not a new discovery about the way these people pronounced shibboleth, chuckle, snort. Listen to those guys. It was known, but then it was turned to sinister purpose. By the way, sinister is the troublesome word, right? We know sinister has its roots in left-handed. Yet, I want you to know something else. When the judges ruled, turn with me now to the book of Ruth. The book of Ruth. And I don't know how to fix this. Randy talked about 2,700 years, and we know that whatever the time of the judges, we know the several century span of the judges, so I have no idea how close in time Ruth was to the time of Jephthah. We don't know that. Well, all we know is this. In the days when the judges ruled. Right? So she may have been active in a flourishing moment early on when things were still pretty good. And we know even later there were still times in this downward spiral. It was not uniformly troublesome and sinister. But in the time when the judges ruled, Ruth lived. And so I want to know about Shibboleth. You see, this is a juxtaposition sermon. I've placed Shibboleth beside sandal. And I want to give due attention to both. Now, come on now. Somebody knows the sandal in the story of Ruth. We'll get there. I'm going to have to read a bit with you. So let's just take a tour through this book, because I do want to dwell on this part. I want to know what happened at the fords of the Jordan, but I also want to relish the language in the book called Ruth. Chapter 1, let's just get something out of each chapter here. It's four chapters long, as you know. And you remember that Naomi ends up in the land of Moab with two daughters-in-law, all three having lost their husbands. And so she purposes to go back to the land of her heritage. And she intends for her daughters-in-law to stay behind with their heritage, with their families. And she says, now I'm reading in verse 8, "But Naomi said to her daughters-in-law, 'Go, return each of you to her mother's house. May the Lord deal kindly with you as you have dealt with the dead and with me.'" You've done everything you should do. You have acted rightly. In fact, you've acted beyond rightly. You have acted kindly. Next I read, in the same chapter, the most famous lines of the book. "But Ruth said, 'Do not urge me to leave you or to return from following you, for where you go, I will go. And where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there will I be buried.'" No celebration of ease, but a declaration of determination. This is my intention. So Ruth returns with her. And now in chapter 2, Naomi sends her. Well, no, actually Ruth says it to herself. And this is something I just note in passing. Chapter 2, verse 2. Ruth the Moabite said to Naomi, at least 6 times in the book, she's named Ruth the Moabite. Her foreignness is emphasized repeatedly. But notice what this Ruth the Moabite said to her mother-in-law. "Let me go to the field and glean among the ears of grain," which, by the way, one meaning of the word Shibboleth, "after him," one possibility, "after him in whose sight I shall find favor." See, that's almost God talk there, right? Find favor in the eyes of God. I want to go to the place. I'm going to go work. And we're told that this man in whose eyes she's going to find favor is a worthy man. That's back in verse 1. A worthy man of the clan of the husband of Naomi who died. There's a hint of that worthiness noted in his first appearance in verse 4 of chapter 2. "Behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem, and he said to the reapers, 'The Lord be with you.'" Now, that could be a perfunctory greeting and not the words of faith, but given what we know of the larger story, it seems to be part of his being here. He speaks words of God to the people, to the workers, and they answer, "The Lord bless you." And then he asks, "Whose young woman is this?" And look what is said about her. There's a report. Verse 7. "She said," she's that young Moabite woman. See, there again, her foreignness named. "She said, 'Please let me glean and gather among the sheaves and the reapers.'" By the way, gleaning is a wonderful, very specific task, and we could talk about that on another occasion. "She has continued from early morning until now, except for a short rest." She's a good worker. She's an earnest worker. And then when she is given some favor by Boaz, she says to him, verse 10, "She fell on her face, bowing to the ground, and said to him, 'Why have I found favor in your eyes?'" She intended that, but it happened. that you should take notice of me, since I am a foreigner? But Boaz answered her, all that you have done for your mother-in-law, word is out, you are known, and I favor you because of who you are and what you have done. In fact, Boaz goes on, verse 12, the Lord repay you for what you have done. This is the God repaying you. And a full reward be given you by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge. That's God talk. Look in Ezekiel 16, you'll see that. Then she said, I have found favor in your eyes, my Lord, for you have comforted me and spoken kindly to your servant, though I'm not one of your servants. You understand? The second time now the word kindly has come. Naomi said it about the daughter's behavior, and now she says it about Boaz. Then in verse 20, the same chapter, verse 20, this is after after Ruth goes home to Naomi and reports. And Naomi says, may he be blessed by the Lord, whose kindness has not forsaken the living or the dead. You notice, third time now. The man is a close relative of ours, one of our redeemers. And Ruth the Moabite said, there again, besides, you shall keep close, he said to me, you shall keep close by my young men until they have finished the harvest. And Naomi said, now this is one of the one time you get a kind of a hint of the judge's world around them. Naomi said to Ruth, it is good, my daughter, that you go out with his young women, lest in another field you be assaulted. A young woman not safe in the fields. Just a hint. It's not developed there at all, but there's a hint. We turn to chapter 3, and in that chapter we find where more favoring happens. This is where Ruth meets Boaz at the threshing floor. I invite you to read the whole little four-chapter book this week. Read it out loud and celebrate the delightful experience that's at work here. She goes and lies down when he's merry from the harvest celebration, and she came and softly and uncovered his feet and lay down. At midnight, the man was startled and turned over, and behold, a woman lay at his feet. That's got to be kind of a funny, that's Bible humor, surely, right? He's surprised, right? And he said, who are you? And she answered, I am Ruth. She doesn't say the Moabite. I am Ruth, your servant. Listen to this. Spread your wings over your servant, for you are a redeemer. The same language that Boaz had used about God seeking refuge under his wings. Now she applies it to Boaz. Spread your wings over me, for you are a redeemer. And he said, may you be blessed by the Lord, my daughter. He understands this is God and carrying, continuing on. I'm in verse 10, chapter 3, verse 10. You have made this last kindness greater than the first. Third time, kindness appears. And verse 11, and now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you all that you ask, for all my fellow townsmen know that you are a worthy woman. Remember, we're told initially Boaz is a worthy man. Now we know we're told that Ruth is a worthy woman. And that brings us to his determination, Boaz's determination, to do the right thing, to do his duty. And maybe we're tempted to think Ruth is just cute and wants to take her home, but that's not what's being talked about here. That's not it at all. He says, in fact, Naomi knows whose Ruth is dealing with. Look at the last verse of chapter 3. Naomi replied, wait, my daughter, until you learn how the matter turns out, for the man will not rest, but will settle the matter today. He won't dally, dawdle, delay. He will fulfill his intention. And that's what chapter 4 is about. Chapter 4 is Boaz doing what he's supposed to do. He goes to the gate, a public place. He sees a closer redeemer come, and he says, "Friend, you're not my enemy. You're my friend, and you have a responsibility to redeem this woman. And I yield to your prior opportunity. Here it is. You're given your opportunity. What will you do?" At first, he's interested when he thinks he's going to get some land. But when he's told, not only do you get land, you get Ruth the Moabite as well, he's not interested. And then Boaz says, let's look at I'm in chapter 4, verse 6. "Then the Redeemer said, 'I cannot redeem it for myself, lest I impair my own inheritance. Take my right of redemption yourself, for I cannot redeem it.' This was the custom in former times. To confirm a transaction, one drew off his sandal." This is the title word, the shibboleth, that sign of horrible intent, matched with the sandal, the sign of proper purpose, proper fulfillment. The sandal is a sign. And now we'll go to the very last verses here of the book, of this chapter 4, verse 15. "After Ruth has had a child, a son, he shall be to you a restorer of life and a nourisher of your old age. For your daughter-in-law, who loves you, who is more to you than seven sons, has given birth to him." And then they named him Obed. And then a genealogy follows at the very end, beginning in verse 18. I won't rehearse all of it, because I'm sure I will shibboleth some of it. But I will call your attention to the last word of the book. The last word of the book of Ruth is David. Ruth, the Moabite, is the great-grandmother of the great king. Let us know what happened at the fords of the Jordan. But let us also know what happened at the gates of the city in the time when the judges ruled. I want to remind you here quickly of the two, I have two lists. First is simply a rehearsal of the four times the word kindness or a form of kindness is used. The first time is Naomi speaking to her two daughters-in-law. The second time is Ruth speaking to Boaz when they first meet. And the third time is Naomi speaking about Boaz and what he's done. And then the fourth one is Boaz speaking about Ruth in chapter 3. And I will ask you to note the second and the fourth are the kindness accompanies the references to refuge. It is the language of God and God's kindness. This is Hesed talk here. I don't know if it's translation of that word, but it is that idea. Just a reminder of these four places. But now we come to a larger set of, I have a set of four reminders that I take from thinking about these two places. I'm thinking now, the fords of the Jordan on one hand and the gate of the city on the other, or the fields of grain. I believe it to be true today that order and disorder tug at each other. But it's not a peculiar problem that's come today. It's a constant problem. It's always there. And I promise you, teenagers through the ages have felt that, well, not through the ages. I think teenagers are a pretty modern notion. But sometimes young people have felt the urge to tug against order. That's nothing new. But they do tug. And the danger is real that one or the other can become idolatrous or oppressive in some way. And so we have to reckon with that. We have to reckon with the dangers at the ford. But that's not all. In the midst of this, when the judges ruled, a Moabite came to the Lord. Somehow, she saw something in Naomi and Naomi's family and the life she offered, the words she spoke. We don't know what it is, but somehow, Ruth, the Moabite, said, I'm with you. I'm with the God that you honor, and I'm going to stick with you, and you cannot get rid of me. That's exciting. And it happened when the judges ruled. I want to believe that today, new people can be drawn to God's kindness. We need to make sure that we are publishers of God's kindness and welcome the new people in. Thirdly, people can watch or they can work God's ways. Boaz does that. He works God's ways. And he does it with friendly energy, precision, and dispatch. He's not just messing around making stuff up. He knows what to do, and he does it. And he doesn't delay. And his whole life, it seems, he's a worthy man. His whole life seems shaped by God's ways. His workers know that. When he comes to see them, he comes from Bethlehem to the fields to see, I want to see you men working, and I greet you with the Lord's blessing. People can do that when the judges ruled. I don't know how close that is to the time of the fords of the Jordan, but it's still possible. And I want you to take that with you. Friendly energy, precision, and dispatch. In the public places, we can say to someone, friend, sit down. Partly echoing something Randy read in his comments about Isaiah 9 this morning, God is working his big plan. He takes some pretty seedy characters like Jephthah to do it. And he has people like Boaz to do it. And it's a pretty messy mix from our point of view. Well, actually, maybe just my point of view. I don't know how that's all sorted out. But I don't have to know that, and I don't have to wait till I have it figured out to do and be what God wants me to be. All I need to do is say, God, I believe that you have a plan, and I want to wonder, I want to marvel at what you're doing, and I want to be part of that. I want to be part of it. I want to be like Boaz, and I hope you do too today. So, assignment for tonight, or this week sometime, read Ruth and delight. I know you heard about this not too long ago. I think Jeff probably preached a sermon about it not long ago. But you get what you get. Sometimes it's leftovers. I happen to like them. I want you to know that we don't live in the time of the judges. We live in a time when order and disorder tug. But we live in a time where God's working out his plan. And he's going to do things that we can't imagine. And our best hope is to say, do it. Let me delight in what you're doing. Let me be part of it. Let me be known as a worthy man like Boaz, a worthy woman like Ruth. And then I can face whatever I come to. If I have to come to the fords of the Jordan, I can face it. If I simply get to live in the gates or in the fields, I can do that too, because I have decided to do like Ruth. I'm going with you, God's people. There must be somebody here this morning that wants to think anew about this in their lives. It may just be something you need to do privately, at home with family, but even just by yourself. I need to reinvigorate. I need to get this tug resituated in my life. Do it. And it may be that you need to ask for help here. Maybe you need to come forward and say, I'm wrestling with some real challenges in my life, and I'd like some help. Well, people here will be happy to pray with you, be delighted to join you in that adventure. And it may be that there's someone who needs for the first time to say, I want to go with Jesus. I want to be his person. And that person needs to come forward and say, I believe that Jesus is the Christ. Confess that Jesus is Lord, and then submit yourself to baptism so that your sins can be washed away and you can rise and walk in newness of life. Three possibilities. At least one of them must fit each of us, I know today. So please respond well as we stand and as we sing.